This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, online at WTK.com. It's now time for the MGoBlog Roundtable, brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
The boys are back in town, at least two of them. I don't know where Craig Ross is.
Craig Ross cannot be described as a boy.
What is Craig Ross doing this morning?
He's thinking of his next jab at Brian Cook
right?
Next week.
Right.
He's writing down ideas.
Sitting across from me, Brian Cook from MGoBlog. Brian, how are you this morning?
I'm good.
How did bye week treat you?
Oh, it's so good to have a bye week.
You remember when you said it wouldn't be so like Michigan State for them to win this game? You remember you said that? Like, I thought the same thing. Well, they won that freaking game.
Well, you know, they...
And you guys all pounded Michigan, Purdue, right? As a favorite? All right. They were the favorite, right?
Yeah, they were they were favored in that game, as though they should have been.
Well, someone tweeted me, is like, this is the ultimate letdown situation for Purdue, and that's what that looked like.
Yeah, Blau has been ripping it up, and he had his opportunities in that game.
He did,
just missed
he?
All of them, and I'm just like,
come on, dude.
Seriously.
Right? Yeah. Right? I felt the same way about Nate Stanley. It's like, what? Dude.
Man, yeah. That guy, I mean, the middle of that game.
He banged his thumb on someone's helmet, and then it was just, he was over. It was
no, but he came back after that. Like, he had some good throws in the last drive.
Nah.
But.
No. Like, it's wet. He doesn't have a good grip on the ball, and it just.
Yeah, he was terrible. Up. You get decent quarterback play.
It's good for Michigan, though, because you get terrible quarterback play from a couple of opponents that you don't play, and then your resume looks better, so.
Tis true. We also have Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you doing, Sam?
Doing great. So, guys, I'll start off with the news of the day, and that was the retention and then, kind of the reversal of that plan, of that decision, and firing of DJ Durkin by the University of Maryland. Just your take on what was an egregious mismanagement of this situation.
Well, good for everyone involved with the University of Maryland who isn't the board. So the student government gets active, you know, the governor, both people in the governor's race are like, nah. And it's good that a public institution has a check like that. I do think it's kind of symptomatic of the fact that once you have a certain amount of money and power, you just think accountability goes out the window.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, look at it, Michigan State, like, same thing. Look at it, Ohio State, same thing. So I was surprised, but then I thought about it, and I was less surprised. And
less surprised by the initial decision?
By the initial decision.
Right. I guess I was never less surprised, but I was more surprised by the reversal. Because how could you think people were going to respond any differently than they did, unless, as you said, you're in the ivory tower and you're just so far removed from other people, or you just don't care what they think.
I guess. I don't know what the situation is with their regions. I don't know if they're elected or not. They probably aren't.
I would say they are.
There's more governor control on that one than they are in this state.
Well, whoever the governor is after this election should wipe that board clean and start over. And I only wish we could do the same at Michigan State.
Ed, what did you
think? Yeah, you know, I mean, I was, I saw that he came back and it didn't look like, I mean, it looks like there were some protests, but, you know, only three players walked out of a meeting and a lot of people were saying,
Now, I heard that the initial report said it was three players, but later they said there were more.
There were a bunch that didn't show up at practice the next day.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what I was hearing was that, you know, there wasn't enough of a player base that was upset about this to get him canned. And then he got canned last night. So in that sense, I was surprised. I mean, you know, thinking about it long term, it's like, well, I mean, this would have gone on had the kid not died. Right. And so how many other programs does a similar type of atmosphere happen? And, you know, we just kind of go on as normal. And then the other thing is, like, you know, this guy's not Urban Meyer. D.J. Durkin doesn't have a track record of winning national titles and winning a lot of football games. And I think that's a big difference between what happened at Maryland and what happened at Ohio State.
But they tried to keep him anyway.
Right.
I mean, that was
so maybe that's the most shocking thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess, you know, for me, it was the sheer, and you talk about how, you know, do other places have this kind of atmosphere? And I think it's important to draw a line because, you know, while there are some things that I would consider toxic, you know, some of the language that they wrote about, you know, calling guys names and trying to motivate them, that just...
Most of what the strength coach was doing, I would consider toxic.
I guess for me, for the line for me is not at calling a guy a pansy or something like that. That just doesn't register with me as toxic. What is toxic is when you don't know the line between pushing a guy and harming him. We've been saying this for a couple of weeks. The coaches are supposed to know that. You're supposed to know when a guy is at his limit. You're supposed to know how hard to push. And these coaches didn't. And to compound matters, there was incompetence. Because once he succumbed to the mistreatment.
Once he starts having a seizure.
They didn't know how to treat him.
Right. I mean, I think there's a lot of problems there. But Sam, do you seriously think that every 130 FBS programs, I mean, how many of you do you think really know the line between pushing a guy and his limits?
I would like to think that a lot of them do. I like to think that a lot of them do.
I just don't think that's true. I mean, I don't know personally, but that's just my guess that it's not 129 programs that know the line between pushing a guy.
I would like to think that there are more. I would like to think that you have medical staff at these universities that have an understanding.
I would think that maybe 129 would know that once a guy's over the edge, they know what to do.
Well, Michigan,
that's fine. But
Michigan,
what about pushing him?
Has a third party concussion specialist on their sideline, and he's the one who makes the call.
On concussions, right.
On concussions. And I don't think there should be an off-season workout that doesn't have someone like that who doesn't report to the athletic department, reports to someone else. And if that's not a standard policy in the NCAA
that's a legit check like, in this situation here. Welcome, Craig Ross. How are you doing this morning?
Do you remember what you say whenever I'm 2 minutes late?
Oh man, I know I was going to take this.
Yeah. Craig's on a bender last night.
No, I was not on a bender. I just almost didn't
Halloween.
Come because a guy called me devoutly stupid last week. I claim I'm not. I might have been profoundly.
Wait,
stupid.
Wait, that was the first time that
stupid,
I was angry at you, but I don't remember saying that.
I know you didn't.
Doesn't this happen every week, Craig? No.
Yeah, not every week.
Just profoundly every week?
No, devoutly.
This week?
Devoutly.
So, Craig, your take on the Maryland retention and firing?
Well, I mean, I assume Maryland was reticent just because of money.
No, his buyout is $5 million. It's nothing.
Oh, really?
Like I didn't know. Like, it would literally cost them more to keep D.J. Durkin.
Was going to happen. I mean, that's because the public outcry on it was, but they
seem so shocked, so surprised.
Who at Maryland seemed shocked?
Clearly, they retained him, and then if you read some of the reporting on the aftermath of the retention announcement, and they're like, "Wow, like really? What do you mean? Wow, you didn't? How could you not see this coming?"
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was fairly surprised he came back at all in the first place, but it did last for 2 minutes or however long he was coach again. I guess it was announced. When was it announced he was going to coach this week? Monday?
It took one day.
One day, yeah.
So he was announced Wednesday that he was coming back? And then
Monday,
late.
I think.
Yeah. I mean,
it was one day.
Yeah.
So I think, was it?
Well, they canned him yesterday.
Yeah, it was announced Tuesday, and then they fired him Wednesday.
And
so
that's one day, everybody.
Right, yeah. It is one day, Brian. But
yeah, probably had 36 hours in there, maybe. No,
okay,
30.
That's the most Ed Feng thing that's ever been said.
But they can start turning the page, but it begs the question really quickly, guys. I mean, if you know the people that were around to allow this decision to move forward in the first place. To your point, Brian, maybe those decision makers,
their athletic
get moved
director
out as well,
used to be the athletic director at Georgia. until he was found with a young woman in his car and, like, her panties in his mouth. I don't remember the exact details, but
in his lap.
That's that guy.
They were in his lap.
His lap, okay.
He had her panties, let's just put it that way.
On his person. That guy was the athletic director at Georgia, gets fired, and then he gets hired at Maryland? What?
What? Sam, what did I say at the time?
Hey, you know.
What did I say when they hired him at Maryland?
What did you say, Har?
I said they should never have hired him at Maryland. He was fine to be the associate AD. He was even fine, I guess, to be the interim AD. But he never should have been promoted to the AD job, period. I mean, I said at the time, it's not like it's hindsight.
And the Big Ten should never have taken an athletic department that was as stupid as Maryland's to fall in that much debt. Like, you knew what you were getting when you have a major athletic department that is millions of dollars in debt and has to leave its ancestral home. You knew we were getting a bunch of idiots, and that's what we got. Sorry, Ira. I'm sorry.
Well, the biggest.
I know. I was waiting for the response from the other side of the glass.
So the biggest idiot in the cooking of the books was Debbie. She's the AD at NC State now. She's their problem. But there have been major issues in leadership at this school for many, many years, and that's I'm not gonna dispute that. I've told you, I'm embarrassed and ashamed of my alma mater. It's sad and it's ridiculous.
But we're not embarrassed or ashamed of you. Is the problem, I think, with issues that happen in a lot of schools.
Well, I think
certainly it's at Ohio State.
The Maryland community rejected this decision.
Yeah.
That's the difference with Ohio State.
Right.
I mean, Ohio State, they were all, yes, keep Urban going.
But that comes down to winning football games. An Urban Meyer's track record.
It does come down to the fact that a kid died.
Yeah, Ed, it comes down to the fact that from the moment that the kid died, Maryland actually demanded answers. And
so you don't think Urban Meyer would have survived at Maryland?
No, the people at Maryland,
you
should see my... But you don't know the people that I talk to.
All right.
And trust me, these people don't... It's not... They care about winning. Yeah, they do. But they care actually about ethics. The fans, the alums, not obviously the regents, apparently, or some of the regents, the majority of them, because it was not a unanimous decision. But you should see my phone, and I could show the people that were from the moment that he got retained yesterday. Oh, my phone was blowing up. And the people that wanted decisions and action earlier and to take a stand against this and not put winning above all, that's what the alums and the students at Maryland demanded, and they didn't get it until they acted again yesterday, and then obviously they got it right on the second go.
All right.
I think it's different if it's Urban Meyer.
You're wrong. I'm telling you, you're wrong. Not every school will sell their soul. Not every school.
I hope that's true. And I think in the end, Maryland hasn't. And so I'm not...
They brought the guy back, right?
This level.
I mean, got to the point...
But it wasn't universally accepted by the community.
You can get rid of the board.
Yeah.
You know, they were outliers here. And that's why the decision was reversed.
Also, all their boosters need to check themselves.
Yeah, any booster that wants to pull their money because they wanted to retain the coach, pull your money. That should be your answer for as a regent, as a president, as an athletic department. Your answer should be, you want to pull your money because we fired this coach? Pull your money.
And be very public.
Yeah.
About saying, hey, they pulled their money.
And then exactly. And then you say, we lost our support of this donor, this donor, and this donor, and this is why. And then those people will have to deal with their own consequences.
All right. Moving on, guys. So the actual on-the-field action... which we touched on a bit already. You had the Purdue game, the Purdue loss to Michigan State. What does that tell you? What does that say to you, if anything, about Michigan's dominance over Michigan State? And then the Iowa Penn State game. I just feel like you watch Penn State this season, and you put yourself at an advantage when you make Trace McSorley a thrower. I'm curious what you guys think about that. We need to get to a break. Chew on that for a minute. We'll get to it on the other side. Stay tuned here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA The Ticket.
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, online at WTK.com. It's now time for more of the MGoBlog Roundtable, brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
We have Craig Ross in studio, Brian Cook from MGoBlog, and Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Tell them about your site and your podcast.
Yeah, so I do a podcast called The Football Analytics Show. This week I spent a bunch of time talking about Michigan with the first college football playoff committee rankings, their probability to make the playoff, and why they're the highest in the Big Ten. So go check it out. And you just search Football Analytics Show on iTunes.
They're good podcasts.
Thanks, Craig.
All right. All right, so guys, before we went to the break, you know, I teased talking about games around the Big Ten and what they mean for Michigan. So first with Purdue, Michigan State, does that make you look even more favorably upon Michigan's performance in East Lansing a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it absolutely does. If you look at Brian's UFR this week, which is phenomenal as usual, I mean, you see just what an incredible defensive game Michigan played against Michigan State. Now, I think we all knew that. You gained 94 yards, I think it was.
Right.
And, you know, the defense has been pretty good. But you saw that even with Rocky Lombardi back there, who played okay, they're not a terrible offensive team by any stretch of the imagination. And they can play some defense. And so Purdue, I don't think Purdue is the best team in the Big Ten, as some people said, but I do think that Purdue is a pretty good team. And for Michigan State coming off a bad loss, to get motivated for that game is, you know, good on their coaches. And really, it was a close game. I think it was a one-point line, and I think the game pretty much reflected that in a lot of ways. But I still think it shows how good the Michigan win was.
Well, that game really turned on one giant play by Tyreek Thompson. So
rocked him. Made his dad proud. Unfortunately, he's in the green and white, but reminded me of Clarence Thompson.
Like they're driving, and they've got a good shot at, I think, going up in that game.
Yeah.
And that just shut off that drive. You know, Purdue misses a field goal to tie at the end of that game.
Is that the one they jumped on at the 1 yard line? They did that one too.
Yeah, they blocked a field goal
and jumped on it.
And then I turned the channel and I turned it back and I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, that guy thought he had to recover it, so he didn't know the rules.
Yeah. So I thought that was a fairly even game, as you would expect, but against between two mid-level Big Ten opponents, one of whom happens to have a 29-point win against Ohio State. But you want to talk about Penn State.
Yeah, I want to talk about Penn State, too, because it's been my observation this year. It feels like, and I don't have, you know, empirical data to back this up, but it feels like Trace McSorley is running the football more this year. And I just feel like they're at their best. They're their most potent when he's running the football effectively. When you have him, when throwing is what their fortunes rest upon, I just feel like they're at a disadvantage. He's a 52.8% passer this year.
The only way they win this game is if McSorley gets free, either in scrambles or in running the ball. I don't see them beating Michigan passing the ball. I think you got to keep McSorley in the pocket, put him in a phone booth, let him throw from there if he has to.
Well, they had this incredible lineage of just downfield dudes. Godwin and Gesicki and Deshaun Hamilton last year, and all those guys. Who's the guy who went over Channing Stribling? I forget his name. Who's
in Allen Robinson?
Yeah. Allen Robinson.
Georgia Lake St. Mary's wanted to come to Michigan badly.
Well,
badly.
So they had this just lineage of just every year they've got some guy who's going to rip off a 50-yard catch every game, and now they do not have that. Their outside receivers or possession guys are outright bad. KJ Hamler is their best receiver, and he's a slot. And so that kind of downfield, sorely deep state kind of thing that they've had going for the past few years just isn't there. So that's why it's, you know, he's completing 55% of his passes. That's why his yards per attempt has fallen more than a yard this year. And I think that you're right, Sam, is that if those outside receivers are going up against David Long and Brandon Watson and LeVert Hill, it's just not going to go well for them. And then it's all about, like, how much can they free up Hamler and how many rushing yards can they get their quarterback?
Yeah. Well, McSorley's banged up, too. I mean, he missed big parts of the Iowa game. I don't know what it was. It was a leg or something.
He's practicing with a knee brace on this week, too.
Probably because he's running so much.
He did have a 51-yard touchdown run after that. So a week later, he'll probably be fine, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to play.
Yeah, I think he's healthy. He got bruised up some in that game, but he came back and played fine. I just don't see them beating us through the air. I think they're going to have to scramble out of it.
Well, I mean,
I'm not sure they're going to beat us at all.
I mean, how motivated is this defense going to be for this game?
Very much.
After what happened last year, just playing their worst game on a big stage at night in Happy Valley. I think they're going to be incredibly motivated. It's going to be tougher.
Clearly, Don Brown. This has been. And, you know, we talked about it after the game, some of the matchup decisions that he made in that contest. And he owned it immediately and said, this was on me. And he's going to do that anyway. You know, anytime a guy can, you know, completely bust an assignment, and Don Brown will say, that's my fault because I didn't coach him well enough. But this was different. This was a strategy thing that he came back and said, I didn't put guys in position, the best positions to make plays.
I mean, he had Mike McCray out on
Saquon
on the edge, and I was like, this is probably a touchdown. Then it was a touchdown. I was like, I wish he wouldn't do that. So hopefully.
Yeah, well.
He hasn't really done that so far. Usually if someone's going out like that, it's going to be Bush, and that's a better choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one game where Don Brown really does feel himself, in his own heart, that he didn't do his best job of
putting Michigan. Well, Moorhead is no longer there, and I think that has also been a big factor in their kind of regression.
You know, they say, and I don't know how much you guys have charted them. I had Mark Brennan on from Fight on State yesterday, and his contention was that things aren't as bad as they look with the Penn State passing game. Things aren't as bad as they look for McSorley in the passing game because he's had an amazing number of drop passes this year.
I have noticed that, but that doesn't really help you as a team. Like, it's just McSorley's performing at a better level than his stats imply, but. Same receivers on Saturday.
That is true. That is true.
And, you know, and they are. I mean, this may be the best team we've played this year.
I mean,
they're better than Notre Dame.
No, they're not better than Notre Dame.
From my numbers, they're pretty close. They're not that far apart. And you know, I have Michigan as 7 points better, but it isn't like the last couple of weeks when I felt we were 14 to 20 points.
I mean, the thing that I'm worried about is that they have a defensive line that has four guys that can all get after the quarterback.
Yeah, and they lead the Big Ten in sacks.
And they actually have five guys who can get after the quarterback. They have three defensive ends that they're rotating through, and all of them can get it. And I think Michigan can run them over pretty good because they have, like, two Michael Dwumfor types at defensive tackle. But the Yetur Gross-Matos kid is going off. He's out of his mind. And then they have Shaka Toney. They have a third defensive end whose name escapes me. And, you know, Michigan had some issues against Kenny Willekes against Michigan State.
They did, yep.
And, you know, if you've got a team that actually has three good defensive ends instead of one, like, the tackle issues that we saw against Notre Dame will be more severely tested against Penn State than they have in any other game this year.
Yeah, I mean,
is Bushel Beatty back?
I think he'll be.
He's expected to play.
Here's the thing that Mark pointed out, because I posed the question based on watching a few Penn State games. Said, you know, if you can protect, you can take advantage of Penn State down the football field, which I was surprised by because of, I can't say the kid's name on whatever his name is, the corner.
I'm not ace, so I can't.
I can't say his name, who is supposed to be the best corner in the Big Ten, according to some pundits. But they have given up plays down the football field more than I would expect. And Mark agreed with that. He said, you know, they've been inconsistent in the secondary. So if you can, you know, if you can hold off the rush, if you can give your quarterback some time, you can hit them for some big plays.
Well, their linebacker level is not what linebacker you expects. So they haven't really adequately replaced Jason Kabinda. You know, they've got this Koa Farmer kid who's losing playing time to Micah Parsons, who's a five-star, but he's also a freshman, so he kind of plays like that. So if you can just get to the linebacker level in any way whatsoever, you're going to have a good time. And I think Michigan is going to be able to move the ball maybe in fits and starts because Penn State kind of knows what their deficiencies are, and so they slant a lot. They're trying to get you in the backfield and put you in third long. And if Michigan's in third and long against this team, it's not going to go that well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not a very good third and long team anyway, and this is a team that really will get to the quarterback on third and long.
Ed, what do you have on this game? I mean, what are you?
Yeah, I mean, I got Michigan by 7.
So there's an interesting gap here in the Vegas spread versus the numbers.
10, right?
Yeah, Vegas at 10.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big gap these days.
Yeah, well, this part of the season, too.
Yes. The problem is when the sort of macro view and the micro view. From the macro view, I think 10 is a reasonable line. From the micro view, I think Brian's expressed it pretty well that, you know, can our offensive line hold up reasonably well, you know, so that we can move the ball enough in the game.
There's also the question of, like, can Penn State hold up against Michigan's ground game, which probably they cannot. Mm-hmm. I mean, those guys are all pretty slight. They're young. I think Gross Matos is a sophomore. And, you know, if they don't have a linebacker level, then Michigan is really going to be able to pull out all the Harbaugh stops on the ground, and I think they're going to be able to really grind it up.
734-998-1050. Let's go to the phones and talk to Don in Ann Arbor. Don, you're on the Michigan Insider. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. John Runyon had an interview a couple days ago, and he made an interesting point. He said he was discussing various strategies for the run game, and he said, well, for example, now we're not going to run power against an odd man front. I'm not a big X's and O's guy. Is it possible to explain without using a whiteboard why they don't want to run power against an odd man front? And more largely, is this a distinct difference or change in philosophy from last year, for example?
So power requires a play side double team that, and you really want to get motion on that defensive end. And against an odd man front, a true 3-4, that defensive end is usually more of a defensive tackle. So he's better able to dig in. He's better able to hold up against that. And then you kind of have a problem because you haven't moved the guy that you need to move on power. Against a defensive end like a Chase Winovich or something, it's a much easier task. So
we haven't run that much power this year to begin with.
That's true, yes.
So I'm not sure why that would be a major concern, since this hasn't been a team that's feasted or lived on power all year long.
Well, I mean it is interesting that their run game is heavily down G based. It's got a lot of zone. It's got some stretch in it.
A lot of zone, stretch.
It's split zone. It is a different philosophy.
I mean, I thought one of the most revealing and, not just revealing, but one of the most, it was simple and yet complex at the same time. Because I had a conversation with Ed Warner about mixing concepts. It had been told to me by an NFL offensive guy that you can be a really good power inside zone team. You can do that. Those are married. Or you can be a really good zone team, inside zone, outside zone. But it's hard to be all three. It's hard to be very, very good at running all three concepts. The best teams can. But at the college level, I said, I wouldn't really do it. Ed said at the very beginning, well, I do all three. I do all three. And so we get into the game against, who was it? Was it
Wisconsin?
Against Wisconsin. Yeah. And they're running outside zone and they're gashing them. And so I said, Ed, you know, why is that simple for you? And it's way too complex to an NFL offensive line guy who's now in the NFL, but at the time was in college. He said, no, you don't want to do that at the college level. He said, well, it's complex if you want to run outside zone all the time, if you want to run it every game. But if you only run outside zone against certain looks, if you only practice it against certain looks and you say, hey, we see this look, now we'll run some outside zone. So that's not hard. That's actually pretty simple if you only run it at certain times. And so which gets me to what John Runyon was saying about, hey, we're only going to run power. We aren't going to run power against odd looks. Front, yeah. I mean, this is Ed Warner's way. It's one of his ways to simplify.
Well, it has sure worked this year because I think in the main our ground game has been pretty good. I mean, better than I expect. I think we expected we'd be able to run it some this year.
And by the way,
the bigger question.
And let me reiterate one more time. That guy is the real freaking deal.
I don't think anyone questions that.
He's the real freaking deal. I had to give Bill Green a ton of credit because it seemed like hyperbole at the time. Well, he's the best offensive line coach in the country. Yeah. You know, he's pretty good, but is he really the best offensive line coach in the country?
Well, I mean, remember Ohio State's championship year? They got destroyed against Virginia Tech early.
And that's exactly what he brings up.
And they ended up gashing Alabama. I know, I think Alabama's in injuries, but
that's exactly what he brings up. He said, you know, you look at them early in the year, Virginia Tech, I think he said Navy was another team that they just didn't look very good. By the time you get to the end of the season, and they're killing Alabama.
Well, Virginia Tech had a tactical innovation in that game where they played their defensive ends over the guards. So they have this really narrow front that mucks up the base run game for Ohio State. And so they're baffled by that. That's the first time Bud Foster ever run that. So he comes out with a defense specifically designed to be the off-season surprise.
Right.
It works out. And then everybody on the schedule's like, we're going to do that. And so they figure it out, and they manage to get that tactically beaten. And one of the things that you see on the sideline now is Ed Warner has a play sheet. And I don't know if that was the case in the Notre Dame game. And you know, Michigan has also incorporated the quarterback run in a really effective way. Not only is it getting Shea Patterson chunks of yards, but it's also opening
that
up.
That is
some
a
other
very
stuff.
Astute observation, Mr. Cook.
And
that's
just
what he's all about.
And
man.
I reviewed the Notre Dame game, and I'm like, I don't know what they're trying to do with Shea Patterson. And now I know what they're trying to do with Shea Patterson. So I wonder if
you watch. I'm reminded of a scene of a quote in White Men Can't Jump. You know, you remember that movie?
I love that movie.
Where he says,
I grew up with that movie.
Where he says, you listen to Jimmy, but you don't hear Jimmy.
You can't hear him, Sam.
You know, you watch the game, Brian, but you watch the game. Yeah. You watch the game.
I mean, do you think, Brian, that the idea of not running the quarterback early was a completely sort of intentional thing, and see it evolve over the season where, okay, we're going to bring this out as a part of the offense as we really need it?
I mean, I can't tell you that. Like, that's
I think it was strategic. True? I absolutely think it was strategic.
Well, in what sense, though? Just not getting Shea killed?
I think that was part of it. I think that was part of it. I don't think that was all of it.
Okay. You know, but I would like to see them pull a little bit of that out against Notre Dame when a lot of other things aren't working against a very good defense.
Yeah, but they weren't set up. Like, there were plays on which they were having a mesh point, and they're like, Patterson isn't looking at anybody he can possibly be reading. And that kind of bugged me. Like, even if you're not going to run the quarterback, you got to have that threat. And that wasn't there then. Mm-hmm. So I think there's been a change, and I think that Ed Warner is the most likely source of that because he's the guy with the most recent college spread experience, and he has a ton of it. So
we need to get to a break. Again, we do have some time at 734-998-1050 for you to get in. If you want one more segment on the other side, we'll get into not just the prediction that these guys have for Michigan's game, but we'll look across the college landscape. There's another very, very big game that is of importance to Michigan. That's that Alabama-LSU game. You're rooting for Alabama if you're a Michigan fan. Most of you are, right? Rooting for Bama.
Do you have to root for them?
No. I think you do.
Well, sorry. In the sense that you want them to win, do you actually need to root for them because Alabama is such a big favorite and LSU is overrated?
I got you. Well, we will discuss on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket.
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider for one final segment with the MGo Blog Roundtable. It's brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
We're back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. All right, guys, before we went to the break, I said I think that if you're a Michigan fan, you want Bama to win this game this weekend to remove all doubt should you win out. Brian, you disagree. You don't think it matters.
I think an 11-1 Bama that doesn't go to the SEC championship game does not have a path to the playoff, at least not in front of Michigan. Because in that situation, like, their big non-conference win was against Louisville. They have three garbage teams.
I think you're right if you do a really fair and balanced assessment of the resumes.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
But
I don't think I don't trust the committee to give a fair and balanced assessment of the resumes when you're talking about a national champion, a team that has a likely Heisman Trophy winner, a team that they're saying is Nick Saban's best ever.
They won't say that if they lose to LSU.
Why wouldn't they just say, man, this is a really good LSU team, and they had Bama at home?
I just don't think Bama has the resume power to get in at this point. They would have maybe one top 25 win.
But you're also assuming that, like, there's not spots for both Michigan and Alabama. I mean, I don't think Notre Dame's a shoe-in by any stretch.
Yeah, I mean, that Syracuse game all of a sudden has some interest.
And then there's, like, you know, Clemson could lose, and if Clemson loses, they're done.
Who do you think Clemson will lose to?
Well, I mean, I said they could.
Okay.
I think Clemson's going to they probably drop a game and still win the ACC.
They lost a game to Pitt last year, right? Like,
hey, doesn't Clemson have BC at BC?
Yes.
And then, like, Michigan would hop Clemson if Clemson and Michigan had the same record, I think.
Right. Yeah, because Clemson has Texas A&M as out of conference, although that was on the road. But
right, I feel like Michigan is not going to have a resume where a 12-1 Michigan is under any threat. So in that situation, let's try to get Alabama
right,
out of
right.
there. Let's
I
get them out.
Right.
Let's get them out.
I hope you're right. We got a caller wanted to know your thoughts on Northwestern Notre Dame.
It would be better if Northwestern had an actual home field advantage. But since most
that doesn't exist, right?
Well, not for them. Yeah. And that place will be at
probably,
least half,
yeah.
half Notre Dame fans.
I think it'll be competitive, but, you know.
I mean, which Clayton Thorson shows up? I mean, you watch this guy, like, throw at his receiver's ankles, and then he throws that gorgeous touchdown pass to the guy in the end zone last. I don't even remember who they're playing. But, I mean, that guy.
Wisconsin, yeah. They won 31-17, I think.
Yeah, I mean, which guy shows up? If the good guy shows up, they can absolutely win.
If the good
game.
Guy shows up, I think it'll be a game. I don't see them winning this contest, I think.
No, but it would be
Notre
really
Dame
funny.
Yeah, yep. Notre Dame has so much more balance now.
It would be very funny.
Northwestern controls the West, right?
They do. Yep.
I mean, if they win out, they win the West. So, I mean.
They can drop a game,
I think.
That's where Kirk Ferentz gets to run in his mouth about, you know, Michigan and Michigan State. Like, shut up. Coach your team. Had an opportunity to two safeties and a pick six, and you can't win that game.
Nah,
break.
I interpret all that stuff as shots against Michigan State.
You thought it was shots? Well, he's taking shots at Michigan. He took shots at Jim in a satellite camp tour thing.
I mean, they're clearly very mad about all the Michigan State games they play. Like, their offensive coordinator, like, brings up people getting out of jail on the regular basis. Like, not even talking about Michigan State. It's just, like, lodged in his brain that this happened to him once, and he's livid about it.
Which time? I mean, Michigan State's done that more than once.
The time that Rucker got out of jail and immediately played against Iowa. That's the one that...
Yeah, it wasn't even Glenn Winston.
No, but it's the guy who played against Iowa who you're like, are you serious?
All right, let's go to the phones real quick. Some guys have been waiting patiently on hold. Let's go to Jay in Atlanta. Jay, what's up?
Hey, good morning. Hey, good morning, guys. I'll try to be quick. The just wanted to quickly say, Sam and Brian, your podcast, the Monday after Michigan State, both of you guys need to get the thing bronzed or whatever. Make sure that's a highlight reel for Radio Hall of Fame, Podcast Hall of Fame. Both of you guys were completely on point, and I go back and listen to it just to make me remember that game. Quick question. As y'all were just stating, I got to give this to Brian. I think Alabama 11-1 gets in. And on that point, did you guys see Joel Klatt's, I think it was on the Big Ten Network, the interview, where he mentioned that it feels like, at least based on this initial ranking, the Big Ten teams are really being devalued in favor of the ACC. And again, what that could mean in terms of if it does come down to a 11-1 Alabama or 11-1 or possibly 12-1 Clemson, I think those teams would have the edge. I just want to know your thoughts on that. Thanks.
I heard about the segment. I read about it actually on 24/7, and I haven't seen the detail that you'd need to know that. I kind of feel like the Big Ten doesn't really have a huge leg to stand on in terms of incensed behaviors because, like, who do they beat in the off season? Not that many people. So, but a 12-1 Michigan team is in the playoff. There is no version of college football in which that is not the case.
Hope you're right.
Well, I mean, I agree with that, but wouldn't it be the most Michigan thing ever if that happened?
Hey, let's just have Alabama win.
I don't care who wins out.
No, I think it's most like you're most likely you're correct.
The volcanoes will explode.
You got Jim Harbaugh, you got Michigan, a blue blood, you got all the things that suggest
even if
that
we
you're
are
right.
the conspiracy people that
we are.
Okay.
I am.
Do you think that the playoff is going to be like, nah, we don't want those Michigan ratings?
Yeah. I mean, it's happened before. Why not?
That's real quick.
But
we got one more. Norman in Olympia, Washington. You got to be quick, but I want to get someone on from Olympia, Washington. So how you doing this morning?
Great. Greetings from the great Northwest. Two quick things. If you go to YouTube and you search for Ed Warner, there's some great videos up there on offensive line play when he was, if you can stand looking at him in Ohio State gear, it's really a great video. So I recommend it to anybody that wants to see what's going on with our offensive line now. He's great presentation that he gives to, it appears to be to other coaches. Second thing is he seems to have been a gypsy a bit since leaving Ohio State. Are we going to be able to hold him here?
Well, you know, he didn't. It's not like he wanted to leave Ohio State,
right?
You know, so I don't see any way that Michigan doesn't do what is necessary to keep Ed Warner around.
Yeah, right. We're going to pay him. I mean, that's my guess. We're going to pay him.
Anyway, you do a job that good, pay that man his money.
Yeah.
You ever see? What's the name of that movie?
Rounders,
that's right.
Dude, we got White Man Can't Jump and Rounders on the show?
All right.
Favorite roundtable ever.
We got to get out of here. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050. WTK, the ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.